The Vietnam War, it's over.
Your job's just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of Spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Profoundly Pointless. My name is Nick VinZant. Coming up in this episode, beatboxing and bad Christmas movies.
It's like saying the letter K, like k, k, but you kind of say it inward. You know, it is a battle, so it kind of has that more aggressive kind of head-to-head mentality where you can kind of call them out and you're like, hey bro, like, you know, that's cool, but you keep spamming the same thing, you know, like you're doing anything and people can't see and they can't understand it, right? Don't let that discourage you, especially if you can see, you know, the light at the end of the tunnel. If you can understand it and grasp it yourself, you know, you should do it for you.
I want to thank you so much for joining us. If you get a chance, subscribe, leave us a rating or a review. We really appreciate it. It really helps us out. If you're a new listener, welcome to the show. If you're a longtime listener, thank you so much for all of your support. So our first guest is one of the best beatboxers in the world. And I think the best way to introduce him is just to let you hear it. This is beatboxing champion Pono Akiona. I have an idea of what beatboxing is, but how do you define beatboxing? What do you consider it to be?
More or less, it's creating musical tracks with different body parts, mostly like your mouth or your nose or your throat, your tongue, like that general region.
How did you get into this?
In 2016, I started beatboxing because I saw a video of another beatboxer. His name was Ozellus. And for some reason, that was the one that stuck with me. Because before that, I've seen a couple of other beatbox videos. But for some reason, hearing him, I really thought, like, wow, like, I really want to try that. I really think I could do that. And from there, I remember just trying to do, like, the fundamental sounds. And I picked those up really quick. Like, I could just do them. Like, after hearing them, I could do the fundamentals. So I was like, okay, maybe there's something here. And then from there, you know, I just practiced every day and I went down this rabbit hole and then it was sucked in. I could, you know, never get out.
Now, was other music like that for you or was it just this specifically?
Mainly this one. Before that, I had some musical experience, but nothing really, you know, scratch that itch for me like beatboxing does.
So what kind of defines it as being music versus noise?
I would say what makes it music is the fact that you can turn it into like an entire, like a piece, you know, it's a whole track. There's rhythm to it. There's a flow. It's structured like a song. And then there's certain beatboxers that have even, you know, made careers out of it where they perform for a living.
When you mentioned before, like, the basic sounds, what are some of, like, the basic sounds? Could you give us examples of those?
So the basic or fundamental sounds are your typical drum kit. So you've got, like, the kick drum, right? or the hi-hat, or like a snare. So like, or so if you put them together, just simply it's a. So something like that.
I'm fucking shocked. I can't believe that sound comes out of your mouth. And that's a compliment, right? Like, that was so clean and clear and sounded like the instrument that you were imitating that my mouth just dropped. I was like, holy, how the hell do you do that?
Well, for one, lots of work. I practice, you know, every day pretty much. But to give a quick breakdown of those simpler sounds, for your kick, you just want to, it's like saying the letter B. So B, B, and then you push really hard with your lips. So instead of B, you put a lot of pressure, B, 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 and then you remove your vocals from it. So, and that's a kick. And then your hi-hat, similar, but with the letter T. So T, T, then the last one would be the hardest one. It's your snare. So for the K snare, it's like saying the letter K, like k, k, but you kind of say it inward. And there's your fundamental sounds.
Okay. Is it that hard to learn how to do it? Or is it maybe just me that, like, I have no musical talent? So to me, you might as well be inventing a rocket ship, right? Like, I is it that hard to do? Or is it just like, man, you got it or you kind of don't?
I think anybody can learn those sounds. It might take a lot of work because for some people, you know, it clicks more than others. Like, just like anything else, right? Whereas it... For some people, their brain understands it easier and they're able to pick it up quicker. But I believe that those beginning sounds are sounds that everybody is like physically capable of doing. Like you can eventually do it with enough practice. There are certain sounds that I feel like, you know, there's just like, randomly, just some people can just do it and some people can't, because like only a small number of people in the community know how to do those sounds. But I think more or less anybody can learn.
You can figure it out, right? Like if you did it enough, you're eventually going to be able to do it. Is it generally kind of harder to figure out how to make the sound, or is it harder to figure out how to, all right, make this into a musical flow?
I feel like it really depends, because some sounds it will be really difficult for me to figure out and understand, like to wrap my brain around it. You know, it's like, why can't I do this one specific sound? But then sometimes I'll get a sound and it's like really, really difficult for me to do. So if it's really hard to do, it's hard to put it together into like a beat, right? So it kind of varies, but I think once you get the sound and you just practice it enough more, you know, often you can put it into a beat, but that's not always the case. You know, I still have some sounds that I'm not comfortable yet using in a beat because I don't feel like it's met the certain, you know, quality for me to put in a beat.
You mentioned before, like making a sound with your nose. I don't even know how to do that. Like, what's a sound that you would make with your nose?
One that you would, maybe not all of them like are generated from your nose, but it'll like, it'll come through your nose. So like, you know, for example, like humming, right? You hum, that's just coming through your nose without coming through your mouth, right?
I never even thought about it as coming through my nose. I always thought it was coming through my mouth. I guess it is coming through your nose.
So it's passing through your nose, right? But even though, It's your voice, right? So it starts in your throat. There's a few sounds that are like that. And then there's actually a couple sounds that are like through your nose, like, you know, when you snore. Some people use that sound in a beat. So like, you know, like I don't really use that sound, but that's a sound that people use that comes from your nose.
There's definitely a ton of sounds that you can make, but I wouldn't say that a lot of them are necessarily like musical or good sounds. Like I make this weird sound with my throat, like it's itching the back of my throat, and pretty much everybody who knows me in real life hates it. But like I wouldn't say that's a musical sound. Are there ones where you're like, oh, that's a new sound, and you're like, oh, that's terrible. I can't use that at all.
Yeah, definitely. There's times where I'm like, wow, that like it's more so like a joke, you know, when I do it. I'm like, wow, that's not good, but it's kind of funny. But for the most part, I feel like there are a lot of sounds that at the surface you might not think much of or might not think there's a lot of potential for. But if you explore it enough, because sometimes you can layer sounds together. You can, you know, combine it with this sound and this sound, or do a combo of like going from one sound to another sound. And sometimes they work better when they're you know, paired with something else or layered on something else.
So like when you got started doing this, right? Like obviously it's cool, it's impressive, it's unique. Were you ever kind of discouraged? Because I can hear like my grandpa and my like, hey, that's really cool, Nick. Maybe play guitar, right? Is there ever that kind of stigma around it?
You know, for me, that wasn't something super huge. I remember maybe started hearing that, not directly, but people were, when people heard about this or, you know, saw me doing it, they might have thought, or they you know, vocally said like, wow, that's, you know, that's kind of dumb, that's kind of silly or whatever, right? But I never had anyone directly like tell me like, you should stop, you should not do this anymore, like something like that, right? Like that never really happened in my when I was first starting out. My parents and my family have been really supportive, because you know, at first I'm sure they were just like kind of like, you might have thought like, you know, oh, it's a party trick or something, right? That's what a lot of people think of me in the beginning. But what you can really do with this and what you can really explore is there's a lot. There's a lot to it. You know, there's the rabbit hole is very deep, and you can do a ton of things. And people just often seem to not see that, and they just barely scratch the surface of what can be done in the public point of view. So if anyone out there, you know, if you're doing anything and people can't see and they can't understand it, right, don't let that discourage you, especially if you can see, you know, the light at the end of the tunnel. If you can understand it and grasp it yourself, you know, you should do it for you.
We had an ice climber on here one time, and he said something that always stuck with me in that regard. He was like, everybody's stupid, everybody's crazy until they're not, and it's all a matter of when is it not, right? So how popular is this, right? Like, is it going up in popularity? Is it down? Is it about the same? Where would you say it is?
I think it's definitely growing. Maybe not at as fast of a rate as it was a couple years ago, even, but it's definitely growing, and at least the interest of it. Maybe not the community of beatboxers, but definitely the people that support beatboxing, I think, is getting a lot bigger, because a lot of the competitions are going viral, and a lot of posts on like TikTok or Instagram have, you know, viral videos of beatboxers. People that I know, people that I consider friends even, are blowing up, and I think that's awesome, because it's getting some representation of what, you know, actually is beatboxing. You know, like one of the best crews, so like it's a four people make up this beatbox crew. They did America's Got Talent, and I think they're like one of the top five most viewed videos on the America's Got Talent channel, and they're real beatboxers. They're all like really well respected within the community as well, so they're really like showing what, you know, what we are really capable of, you know, instead of just, you know, putting like, whenever it's depicted in like a TV show or like, you know, a movie or something, it's just like kind of a joke, right? It's not really ever taken like too serious.
Can it move past, I'll just say, like, six, you know, the 60-second mentality, right? Where like, oh, that's really cool. Can I listen to a whole album of this? Do you think it can do that, or is it kind of, it is what it is?
I personally do. I think it definitely can. There's a lot of variety in what you can actually do with it, because like I said, people just, you know, haven't been given that chance to see that. But I know multiple people who have released albums of just beatboxing and have done pretty decent for themselves. And there's also certain people that also, you know, incorporate beatboxing sounds into like produced songs, you know, so that they'll sample like a sound from beatboxing and things like that.
So correct me here. All right, fill in the resume. Now, you just won the American Championships?
Yeah, the 2022 American Beatbox Championship. And the title specifically was for solos, for the solo category. So it's just like one versus one.
Right, like, okay, in a competition, what are you being judged on? Like, how does that whole process work?
The first stage is the video submissions. So everybody records a 2-minute video, or no, 1-minute 30 video. And they selected the best 32 competitors to perform live. And the live competition took place in Atlantic City. So the judges picked their top 32. And from that top 32, everybody, they all performed live. And then from there, they chose the top 16 to move on to the battles. And the way the battles work is they were bracketed off. So 1 versus 16, 2 versus 15, and so on.
Yeah, like a sports tournament, basically. Yeah.
Right. And then from there, both beatboxers have two 90-second rounds, and they go back and forth. They each go twice. So, like, let's say, you know, you and me were battling. They flip a coin. One of us chooses heads or tails. All right, you know, it lands on heads, and I choose, you know, to go first. So I'd go, and you would go, and I would go, and then you'd go. And then that's it. That's time. They look to the judges. The judges will make their decision. You know, they'll vote either one way or another. Whoever has more votes goes on. That process is repeated until the final, and then, you know, at the final, they declare a winner. But the things they're specifically judging, there's really a lot to take into consideration, but it's like your originality, your cleanliness, how well structured it is, how cohesive, how coherent everything is, like, put together to make like a full like track, versus like if it's like, you know, segmented and stuff doesn't really like flow together and work together. And then there's like objective things. So like, you know, is your timing good? You know, are you keeping, are you in time? You know, are you out of key? Things like that.
Are you playing the competition or playing the man, so to speak, right? Like, are you going to do your thing, or like, uh-oh, my opponent went all hi-hat, I better go snare. Like, how do you approach it?
That's interesting that you bring that up. It sort of both, because for one, a lot of people, you know, including myself, they'll come to the competition prepared with set routines and set full like sets, right? So like you have your songs ready. So because that gives you the best chance of like performing your best, right? Because if you go up and you freestyle, it's kind of a gamble, right? Like you could fall off, or you could, you know, just be really like on it right there in the moment. So it's kind of up in the air. So having a set, like, you know, a set, you're more, it's more like solidified, you know, you've refined this over like, you know, months even. And, but what you're saying, like, you know, if they do something, does that impact what you do? Sometimes it does, because you can either, I'll pick my sets, specifically like who I'm going against, because, you know, that does play a factor in, you know, you know, if you win or not sometimes. But in addition to that, some people also like to counter, which is when you do their beat, or sometimes you can counter like their style. And it's just basically showing like you know, oh, you know, it's easy, bro. Like, I can do it too.
Oh,
you know?
That's nothing. Right.
Like, sometimes people will do that just to like shut them down, especially if it's like something that they've, like, it's like their really big highlight moments. Like, oh, look at this. It's so crazy. And you're just like, yeah, I can do it too. Like, so what, you know? So it's sometimes that some people do that sort of thing. And then there's also some like kind of trash talk that goes into it too, you know, nothing too like, insane, but you know, it is a battle. So it kind of has that more aggressive kind of head to head mentality where you can kind of call them out and you're like, hey bro, like, you know, that's cool, but you keep spamming the same thing, you know, like just kind of like just calling them out on like whatever they're, you know, whatever they're doing. That's, you know, well, yeah, just calling them out, really.
That's just kind of part of the culture, right? It's back and forth.
Yeah, yeah, because you're going back and forth. So, you know, they're doing their round, and then you're going to do your round. So you only have two rounds, so you really got to make it count.
Okay, but you're the American champ. Where does that kind of place in the world, though, right? You and I are both based in the States. Is the United States like, oh, man, the American champ is probably better than everybody, or is like, oh, it's the Americans, don't worry about them?
I don't know how to be like humble about this, but I feel like in the comparing country to country, like America's at least number two. You could make an argument for number one, but the three heaviest hitters are probably France, which is probably surprising, right? Like, you don't think France
wouldn't have
France
thought of that.
France is very like really good. France, the U.S., and then the third one. There's kind of a debate for it, but I think it's South Korea. South Korea is really good.
Are you ready for some harder/listener-submitted questions?
Yeah, let's do it.
Hardest sound to make, easiest sound to make?
Hardest sound? Let's see if I can do it right now. That one's pretty hard because sometimes it just doesn't land it like that. Easiest sound to make? Hi-hat.
Are you always working on new ones? Like, man, I got this new sound.
Not always, because you kind of develop a kit that you're comfortable with, and then you just go really deep into what you can do with those sounds. You know, instead of learning different sounds all the time, you're staying at like the surface, right? It's like if you're growing like, you know, if your roots, it's like going out versus if it's going like down, right? If you just rooted in like your style.
Is it harder to conceptualize it, right? Like, how many sounds will you go through and be like, that's not it? Harder to come up with it or harder to do it, I guess?
Probably harder to do it because, I mean, sorry, harder to come up with it because coming up with sounds is not something that's like, you know, you don't make it in a lab, so to speak. You don't like put on your hat, I want to make a new sound, right? But it's more like you accidentally kind of stumble into it or find it, you know, it's just like will naturally come out, or you'll hear somebody else do a sound and you're like, oh, okay, that's, you know, now that's brought into the game, right? And it's like, okay, some people are gonna learn it, some people are not gonna learn it.
Do you have a signature sound?
Yeah, it was probably that one I did earlier, the like yeah, that probably that one.
Is it an open secret, or is it very secretive, like how you make those sounds?
I mean, I could tell you, but I don't know if you didn't really understand everything. I could kind
I'd
of
actually
walk
like to
the,
hear the
steps.
Explanation just to see how much I don't understand it almost.
So the first sound, it's a combination of like three layers basically. So the first sound underneath all of it is inward bass, which is it's a bass created by breathing in. That's why it's called inward bass. So it's like, you know, That's the sound. So it's like kind of like you're breathing in and you're kind of getting this sort of, you know, vibration in your throat. But that's the first sound. So and then on top of that, it's vocalized. So, you know, if you went, you know, if you just hum, right? But if you do that like inward, so so that on top of it, so it's, and then on top of that, there's another sound. It's called a siren. So if you put your mouth in like kind of a V shape, like if you're about to say the letter V, V. And then so that, again, is you do it also layered on top of all those. So. Yeah, that would be that sound. Fuck, I don't know if it has a name really, but
you might as well be speaking like Klingon to me, right? Like, breathe in, like, how to make a sound besides just being like out of breath. But were you like at that? Were you like that at the beginning?
For me, a lot of the stuff was really like intuitive. Like, I'm not sure. I remember the first sound I was like really stumbled on was a sound that the guy who inspired me, you know, Zealous, he used to use it. Like, that was like one of his main sounds. And I was like, how's he doing that? And then I remember sitting down watching his like tutorial on it. And then I got it pretty quick. So I don't know. For me, a lot of these sounds, just I'm really able to just pick it up pretty quick.
Yeah, you get it or you don't, right? Like, I think you and I could sit here for hours and I'd still just be like, I can make that sound. I can whistle. Like, you want me to whistle? I can do that. And if it's you, man, say it's you. Who's kind of the Michael Jordan, LeBron James of beatboxing?
It's not me. but that's tough. And I remember actually, I was watching another segment that you did where you asked that, and there was a defined answer, but for beatboxing it's really tough because I don't feel like there's anybody who's had that legacy or had that, like, it's too young, you know what I mean?
Like, yeah, that makes sense, right?
It's really young where it's like there's a lot of really there's a lot of people like kind of contending that spot, but there's no one who's just like just has it, right? There's no one that's like, you know, that's like ascended ahead of like everybody else. And they're just like, this guy's the GOAT for sure. Like, set in stone.
Now, can anyone make this their full-time living?
I think it's really difficult because I feel like in terms of like the mainstream, in terms of like how much, recognition beatboxing gets, it's tough. I mean, it can be done. I know certain people who've done it, but and certain people who are trying to do it currently, but it's really tough. You know, like I'm not trying to, like, I'm not trying to brag or anything.
Yeah,
but,
yeah, no, I know what you mean.
I won the American championship. Like, you know, I won the title of, like, you know, ranked number one in the U.S. and I'm still not doing it. So, you know, I feel like that kind of speaks to something, you know.
Now, will, I'll say, like, established artists or in, you know, genres of music, will they ever contact beatboxers and be like, hey, I need you to come lay down this sound for me? Like, is it ever in the kind of music that I would hear on the Spotify top 40 or whatever?
Sometimes. I can't remember the artist's name, but I remember somebody pretty big reached out to somebody that I knew, and he did a beat for one of their songs, but I can't remember off the top of my head his name. But yeah, there. I mean, I think it's getting there more so with maybe not the top 40, but, like, you know, the certain songs that you might not expect it from, for sure, we'll have it. But I don't think it's there yet. I think the general recognition from, like, you know, the media and like just the public isn't fully there yet, because there aren't a ton of beatboxers that are just like just performing just beatboxing like all the time and aren't like, you know, touring. But I think it will be, for sure. I think it's growing pretty rapidly. So by the time, you know, I would say in like 10 years, five to like, you know, 10 maybe.
This is going to date me a little bit, right? But I don't know if you've ever seen the guy from, like, Police Academy. Can you, can you, like, mimic other sounds, or is it mainly just around beatboxing, right? Like, you hear a car alarm and you can figure out how to do it or something like that.
Sort of, because I can do certain sounds that sound like other things, but they're not, not like with the, I can't just pick up like a, you know, if you do a random sound, I can't really just, I can, I mean, I could try to like figure it out, but I couldn't just like, you know, just like that, just like, oh, I can do it, right? But there's certain sounds that, like, for example, this is one that I use like in beats actually, but it's like a, it sounds like a bird. Kind of sounds like a chick or something.
Yeah, it does sound like a bird, actually. It's,
but yeah, I mean, just a couple sounds like that. Yeah, so as you know, as I stated, I think off air, right? You asked, but that's where I was from, and I'm from Hawaii, right? And for me, that's a really big thing that I'm super proud of, you know, because I'm also Hawaiian. So that's something that, you know, there's not a lot of representation on top of that, right? So like even less, like, you know, of like the Hawaiian representation, but also the Hawaiian beatboxers and the beatboxers from Hawaii. So for me, it's really important to just like, you know, state it and like represent that, you know, that's where I'm from, because I want to inspire more of the community here to, you know, get into it. So if there's anybody listening out there and they're from, you know, and they're from here, feel free to contact me. I would love to get in contact, because I'm all about growing the scene here. I organized the state championship, and I put that all together, and yeah, just wanted to briefly mention that.
You know, you mentioned about forming a community and getting community in Hawaii going. Is there a place in the United States where like that is the hub of beatboxing?
Yeah. Actually, it's the East Coast. The East Coast is really like where it's at. They have competitions out there like super regularly. There's just a sheer amount of people. It's just there's a lot of people. Like that's where it's at for a lot of So if you're on the East Coast and you're a beatboxer, there's a ton of you know, you have access to a lot of things. But as far as competing, I'm not fully sure yet. I might do the world championship. We'll see. I don't know yet.
I want to thank Pono so much for joining us. If you want to connect with him, we have linked to him on our social media sites. We're Profoundly Pointless on TikTok, Twitter, and Instagram. And we've also included his information in the episode description. So I want to take a second and talk about one of the sponsors of the show, BetterHelp. They are a fantastic resource for anybody who is going through a difficult time, when you feel lost, when you feel stuck. I can speak from personal experience that it really does help to talk to somebody, especially somebody who has been there and who has the training to really help you through difficult times. And as the world's largest therapy service, BetterHelp has matched 3 million people with professionally licensed and vetted therapists available 100% or 100% online. Plus, it's affordable. All you have to do, just fill out a brief questionnaire to match with a therapist. If things aren't working, you can easily switch to a new therapist anytime. It could not be easier. There's no waiting rooms, no traffic, no endless searching for the right therapist. You can learn more and save 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/pointless. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/pointless. Again, you use that link that we've included in the episode description, and you can get 10% off your first month.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So, You want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Okay, now let's bring in John Shaw and get to the pointless part of the show. Can you beatbox?
No, absolutely not.
Will you try, though? Just give me like 15 seconds of beatboxing.
Do I cover my mouth? I feel like every time I see a beatboxer, they cover their mouth, but I don't really need to.
I think that's a media stereotype. Okay. I mean, you did it. But has there ever been something that, like, you feel like you just understood how to do? Something that just made sense to you?
Yeah, not really. Not really.
Like, nothing?
I mean, I don't really have any outstanding skills. I mean, like that. Like, I can't juggle, so to speak. You know, like, something obscure like that. Like, I could play sports okay 20 years ago, but, I mean, that wasn't even exceptional. So, I don't know.
I've had some things that I could pick up pretty quickly, but nothing that I've ever been like good at. Like I could pick up certain things and get to maybe like a level 5 or 6, but if I spent 10,000 hours doing it, I maybe would get to like a 6.2.
Can we just talk about how crazy my hair is today?
I mean, it looks like you just got electrically shocked by a porcupine.
Look at my mustache too, man.
Your mustache is just awful.
I know, I worry about, like, at my job, because I actually have to talk to people, a lot of people every day, and I always wonder, like, what they're thinking. Like, is that a nice mustache?
No one. Look, if you have to wonder if someone's thinking if it's a nice mustache, it is not a nice mustache, right? If the question is even asked, the answer is automatically no. With facial hair in general, I would say, does this facial hair look good on me? If you have to ask, it does not.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Right.
Well, whatever. Getting back to your original question. I mean, I pick up, here's the thing. I would say that I pick up things pretty quickly.
Like STDs?
Now, that would mean you have to make love to a man or a woman.
Right.
Either way.
Crap, I can't even get that.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think I'm pretty quick at picking things up. Now, whether or not I can do them well is another thing, but. I don't even know if this is part of your question, but I'm one of those people that if I make a mistake and I learn how to do it correctly the second time, I usually don't make the same mistake twice.
Yeah. I do wish I was really good at something, though. I've always, like, I just wish I had one thing I was really good at.
I mean, if you think about it, you probably do. I mean, it could be things you don't even realize. Like, maybe you're really good at being a good friend. Maybe you're a good husband. Maybe your wife just secretly really likes you instead of outwardly hates you. I don't know.
She tolerates me. We're in the tolerating phase of the relationship, I think. I would love to. Look, I don't even know what I believe in terms of the end of our lives. Like, I go back and forth. Mm-hmm. But I would love to, like, get an evaluation of your life at death and be like, you know what? If you would have played backgammon, you had the potential to be the best backgammon player in the world, but you just never played. Like, could you imagine that if there was something that you would have been in the top 1% in the world, but you just never got exposed to it, never had a chance to do it?
But my philosophy on that is anybody can say that about anything. And if I was brought up in a household and in a school district, so to speak, where there was water polo, maybe I would have been great at water polo.
Would you?
But I was never exposed to it.
Would you feel super gypped, though? Or just like, fuck, well.
No, I mean, to be honest with you, the things that I feel gypped on have nothing to do with physical ability. So, no.
Do you want to elaborate?
I mean, listen, I'm not going to throw my parents under the bus.
Well, you just did. Shout out to Mama Shaw. Shout out to Papa Shaw.
we're all right. We're raised by our parents, and we develop characteristics that are like them. and some of which aren't the best. And I, you know, as I get older in life, there's things that I discover that I really like that I was never exposed to as a child, but it's, you know, and I, or a teenager, whatever. And I wish I had been, because I could have had this love of whatever it is for years instead of just now experiencing it sometimes for the first time.
See, but I would say the same thing about myself. And my parents were pretty proactive in terms of letting us do new things. But I was limited by where I lived. Like, I was raised in Derby, Kansas, where you're essentially – look, and this is just how small places are. It's essentially the same exact person copied over and over and over again. It's not a lot of diversity in terms of things that people do and like. Right. So I wasn't exposed to things that now I thoroughly enjoy. I was like, man, I wish I would have been exposed to that earlier.
Yeah. Like, for instance, you're a big rock climber. You're a big hiker. I would presume that you didn't have any of that growing up because you went into the middle of cornfields and kicked cows over.
First of all, you don't kick them over. You push them over. And even though I lived in Kansas for, including college, 22 years, I never don't actually know a single person who ever pushed a cow over. You ever seen a cow up close, like been up close? They're fucking huge. Like, you could push that thing over if you wanted to.
I do want to talk about a couple of things that happened this past weekend to me. One of which was seeing a Clydesdale horse up close and realizing how goddamn big those things are. And I was amazed. Like, I'm a big dude. But you see a horse like that, and it's like, wow, that thing is big and it's strong. It could essentially kill all of us if it wanted.
Did you get a look at the undercarriage? What'd you think of the undercarriage?
What a question.
I don't know if that, I can't tell if that's a yes. Okay. You definitely looked, right? Like, are you the kind of man that looks at an animal's penis if you get it, if it happens to be right there?
I don't want to answer yes or no to that, but the fact that I'm
then that's clearly a yes
should give you the answer. Yes,
I do know a couple of people that have been like, "Look at the balls on that dog!" Like, why would I look at that? I don't.
Yeah, I don't.
I don't want to look at a dog's like, balls.
For the horses, like, we were walking next to them, and it's kind of hard not to like look,
right?
Because it's just there. I mean. I could go on and sound like a real creep. I'm just going to say it's noticeable. It's hard to miss. And they don't wear underwear, for God's sakes.
Why don't it more? I wonder if there's a company that has ever invented underwear for animals. Not just like dogs or cats, right, when they're kind of doing whatever their thing is. Like, not diapers, but underwear for animals. Like, can you get underwear for, like, a porcupine? Like, oh, I got a pet ferret and I need some underwear for it. Well, we make underwear for ferrets.
I mean, I feel like every time we ask questions, we get answers from the most random of sources. But that's a good question. I wonder. And if not, we should definitely come up with a non-itch, nice textured underwear for animals available in all sizes.
Last thing on the stuff that we talked about. We actually got a voicemail from one of our favorite listeners, Greg. Shout out to Greg. About the idea, would you rather be a jack of all trades? Wait, what's the saying? Would you rather be a jack of all trades or a master of one?
I mean, I that's just so tough. I guess I'd have to, like, I'd ask all these follow-up questions, but just to keep it simple, I'd probably be a master of one.
See, I would play the percentages and rather be a jack of all trades, because I'm assuming that even if I'm really good at this one task, I'm probably not going to be the best in the world at it. So it's probably like be able to make a living off it. So maybe it's better to be a jack of all trades.
I guess when I think of a master of one thing, I think of, you know, Ronaldo, LeBron, Tom Brady. And listen, it would be great if you were that gifted. Thing is about like Tom Brady, I don't even know if he's that gifted.
So now you have finally, after all this time, fallen off the Tom Brady bandwagon. All right, let's move on.
To some shout-outs. Nick loves when I do that. All right, so let's get some shout-outs here. we're children every time.
Nothing wrong with being a child, right? I don't understand. Well, I get mad at people when they say that as like an insult. Like, oh, you're like a child. Like, who's ever looked at a child and been like, wow, that looks like their life sucks, having fun and enjoying everything that they do?
Has anyone ever, outside of your wife, ever called you a child?
My wife has ever actually done that. I think the only people who call me that are people who don't know me.
I'm not sure a random person's ever told me that. It's people close to me that tell me I'm like a gigantic child.
You aren't like a big baby. Samwell Tarly.
Oh, God damn it. All right, well, we're going to move on from that. Let's see. Joe Sands. This might be the worst one I do here, but we'll try. Also, some really good handles, by the way, this week. So we'll go back here. Joe Sands, Tim Stetzel, Matt Austin, shout out to a former co-anchor, pretty active for us in social media this week. Anyways, Adrian Garcia. Going back here, Zach Szczynski, his handle is Szczuzin for a Bruisin.
That's a good one.
Thought that one was funny. Colin Woods, his handle is Life in the Woods. Dylan Brazil, Mikey Muniz, who for some reason when I saw that I kept thinking of Frankie Muniz and wondered if he's still alive. All right, and the last one here, and I saved this person for last because I thought they had a fantastic handle. I don't expect you to understand this, but Willie True, and their handle is Motley True.
Yeah, it's just after Motley Crue, man. I mean, it's pretty awesome, good. Though. It's not like it's the problem good. Is that as soon as somebody tells me something that like, hey man, this is funny, or like, this is a great story, I immediately become less interested in whatever it is. You've built it up. There Listen, should be Willie, no building
Willie,
up.
Don't let him turn you off, all right?
I'm not. I'm talking about handle. You. Like, don't ever, for me, don't ever build something up. If somebody's like, this is a funny joke, okay? It's automatically, well, you know, like, you're climbing uphill. Why automatically start climbing uphill, man?
I've been climbing up this mountain for 227 out of 228 episodes, but here I am.
Well, we have
still climbing.
Oh, who did the other three episodes? Because we're 230 now. We have 230 fucking episodes.
Only 228 uploaded to iTunes.
Oh, well, maybe we lost one somewhere. Probably could happen, honestly.
I only know of one time that I got stood in for it because my child was being born.
Two. And that's no excuse. I had children and still put the whole thing together.
Oh, was it COVID? Maybe. I don't know if I've ever said that in the show. Anyways.
No.
All right. Well.
It was early on.
Children can be terrible. Can we admit that? Like, we love our children. But 2 and 3 are not trying ages. Like, I'm sorry. My oldest just turned 4 in a couple of months. Like, she just turned 4 in 2 months. And she is a walking, talking 15-year-old. I don't even know what to do. She's smarter than me. She's better than me at most things.
Yeah, dude. It's only just beginning. I will say this. Great. This will be the last thing we say about parenting. My son is now 6 and a half, and it's fucking sweet. Because they can do stuff with you, but you can still beat them at everything. So you're like, you want to play Mario Kart? Yeah, I'll play Mario Kart. Fucking one Mario Kart. Take that, little shit. Okay. All right. Let's move on.
All right. You ready to hear a story? I'll make it real quick. So my youngest wakes up from her nap on Saturday afternoon covered in throw up.
Okay.
And I mean covered. She had, and for lunch that day, they had hot dogs. So imagine that. It was.
Yeah, that's a bad
hot dog
one,
throw up.
Yeah. Okay.
So she goes on throughout the night kind of throwing up, but we give her Pedialyte, everything. So she's really just throwing up water and some juices. We're putting him to bed. I'm reading him a story. This is where it gets fantastic for me. I'm reading him "'Twas the Night Before Christmas." I finished the last line. "And Merry Christmas to all and to all a good night." And as soon as I said the projectile vomit everywhere again. It was terrible.
Yeah, it's called parenting. That's what happens. Right?
You're the only person that didn't find that story remotely funny. And that doesn't surprise me because you have no soul and you're a small man.
Okay.
All right. I mean, you know, It is what it is. All right. So these questions are really, these will be interesting answers from you. Christmas lights. Do you put them up? Don't you put them up? Explain to me what Nick does in the Vinzant household for Christmas decorations.
My Christmas decorations go up on the weekend after Thanksgiving. The only time I have ever broken that tradition is this year when I was like, fuck it. I'm not waiting for Thanksgiving. I'm skipping right past Thanksgiving and going the Christmas lights. And they went up in the beginning-ish of November. I've actually bought more Christmas decorations this year because I looked at my wife and looked at our neighbors and told her, you're not doing a good enough job here. Our neighbors are making us look ridiculous. And we had an inflatable snowman that I've gone out there and had to fix 15 times. But okay. I'm okay with it, right? We've got all white lights, okay, which I don't think is appropriate. She was chastised appropriately because of that, and that we need some color in the decorations. I'm done fucking around when it comes to it because the neighbors are starting to get more serious about their decorations, and I'm going to be out here like Clark Griswold in about 10 years.
Yeah. God, I hope I'm around for that. I really do. That would be fantastic.
How many inflatables do you have now? Can I tell this story to make it faster? Because you tell it and it takes a little while.
Sure.
Basically, John's father-in-law loves inflatable Christmas decorations, and he has how many of them?
I mean, we have nearly 40. That's like all seasons, though. We probably have 30 Christmas-oriented.
Why don't you throw them away, though, right? Because I understand that you are getting these gifts from another person, but at some point, like, I'm throwing these away because I couldn't possibly give somebody 40 gifts of something and then be like, hey, wait a minute. Where's the three blind mice?
Actually, I know you don't want me to take long with this story, but he's only been up here twice in 5 years, pretty much. The first summer or the first winter he did that, I refused to take them down because he put up, no joke, like 24 of them. And we all know, you know, once the ground freezes, it's hard as hell to get those things out, like the stakes out. So I literally just ripped like, you know, the fasteners away from the inflatables, and there was holes in probably half of that 24.
Good.
The next winter he comes up, he stitches all the ones that I broke. He replaces light bulbs. He does all this stuff. So I tried. God. I tried my damnedest.
God, I bet. And he probably thinks you're a complete fucking idiot because he's like, look at this moron ripping up these good inflatables, yeah, not replacing the bulbs. He hates you. He hates you.
Well, let me tell you,
it's going to get worse.
I'm not.
It's only going to get
worse.
I'm
not going to say it, but it's reciprocal, if that's the feeling.
You just
I
said
can tell
it.
You that.
Yeah.
I will say this. I let my girls pick out 5 inflatables this year to put up, and I think we did a pretty good job. Except, and this is nothing against this community, but they decided to put the LGBTQ+ unicorn, which is 5 feet tall, at the end of my drive. So that's basically the only thing you see when you're driving by my house is a gigantic LGBTQ+ unicorn lighting up the sky. So
good. Good.
Which is you're great. Just, I mean, listen,
look,
like I said,
represent.
Great.
Hey.
And then I also put Christmas lights around my 20-foot pine tree and thought I was going to die multiple times because just of the vastness of doing
that. Wait, did you go all the way up the tree? How far did you go?
Goddamn right. Yeah, I was on a 12-foot ladder on the top rung. I had made like a makeshift, you know, like thing with a hook on the end to kind of swing the lights around the tree. And I mean, it looks good. It looks great, but it took me a long time.
You know, this is how you die, right?
There were a couple instances where I'm like, I'm going over and I'm going into the tree because I don't want to fall directly under the ground. But the worst I did was like having to put my feet on a couple of thick branches, like 1 foot to balance myself.
Okay. All right. Sounds like you got it done, though. That's all that matters. You got it done.
I did. And actually, I know none of you can see this at home, but you know what, Nick?
Let's see the picture.
I'm going to show you the unicorn.
Okay.
Because I want your take on this here. Let me see. All right. Let me see if I can make it. All right. So.
You got to back it up so I can actually see it. Okay. That's representing the unicorn, right? Like, that's just not being.
Don't mind my wife who is out there randomly doing stuff.
That's just not being an ally. That's representing hard. Right? Good for you. Put it out there.
Hey, yeah, I mean, what did you think of the Christmas trees? Did you see the lights?
I was just looking at the unicorn, actually.
Yeah, of course you were.
Seemed good, right? It didn't wow me, but I didn't look at it and be like, that's not a great job. I would have had a little bit more spacing between the inflatables. Your inflatables are a little bit bunched up. You need a little bit more spacing. Yeah. Seems like it's probably confined to one side of the house. You need to spread those around.
That also has a story, by the way.
Yeah, well, it's too bunched up.
My fucking father-in-law decided to make my whole goddamn yard fucking, a death trap for these things. So I said, I'm not doing that again.
Oh, okay. So is it your house or your father-in-law's house? So it's your house. So then maybe it's time to act like the man of the house.
All right. I don't want to talk anything more about him. So that should tell you how much that means.
Yeah, just you got to spread out the inflatables. They're all too close together. Go redo that.
Thank you. Christmas wrapping. What kind of wrapper are you? Are you like the tight wrapper? Do you do it too loose? Do you not wrap at all? Give me an insight.
I do about 60 to 75%. I am a great starter, but once I get to the corners where you got to do the fold thing, I fuck it up. Like, I start out well. Like, if this was a 100-meter dash, like, okay, he's booking for the first 25 to 50, but then you see it start to fade, and then it really collapses. For my wife, though, I do like to wrap some presents, like just make a ball and surround it entirely with tape, basically making it impossible to get into. It's humorous to me.
That's a dick move.
Yeah, it is.
But appreciated. All right, let's see what the masses picked for us to talk about today. Let's see. The new Avatar movie that did not win.
Don't care.
Best holiday gifts that we've ever received that also did not win. The creepy Mark Zuckerberg deep fake video that came out, which obviously was not him, but made a lot of people and some within his own company think it was him, which is kind of scary, but that didn't win, so we won't talk about that. What did win, another question for you, real tree or a fake tree?
Fake tree. Just easier. Buy it one time. Absolutely. You don't have to deal with it. I understand the appeal of a real tree, but it's too much of a pain in the ass. You've got to deal with going to get the thing. You've got to water it. You've got to throw it away. You've got to make sure it doesn't burn your house down. I go artificial. It's just easier.
Yeah, we are in agreement. I had real trees for years, and no way. No way.
Jose. Ultimately, I do it because I'm cheaper, right? I can pay $60 for a real tree every year, or I can get this fake one for $45 after Christmas. That's an easy decision.
Oh, I mean, it's not money for me. I mean, it does make sense, but no, man, fake tree, you don't have the cleanup. I actually think it looks better.
Okay, are you ready for our top? Are you ready for our top five?
Yes.
So our top five is top five Hallmark Christmas movies. But the catch is, we haven't actually seen any of these movies. It's just by looking at title only. And there are 175 Hallmark Christmas movies that have been made in the last two decades. Think about that. 175 Hallmark Christmas movies have been made in the last 10 to 15 years, which is incredible.
I'm actually kind of surprised that's it. I mean, I feel like there's way more, but
think about how many movies.
Apparently not.
That's like five movies. No. Five movies every year over 10 years would only be 50 movies. They're making like 10 to 15 Hallmark Christmas movies every single year, which is insane.
I mean, they're quite profitable, obviously. I mean, how many major TV stars have gone into Hallmark and are now set for life?
Well, none. But there are people that you're kind of like, oh, that's what happened to them. Like somebody, the one that I can think of, she was in Sex and the City, but the least famous of the four women from Sex and the City, she does Hallmark movies now.
No, I mean, there has to be. Like Candice Bure, right?
You don't know who that is.
Well, yeah, that's because you didn't watch TV as a child, apparently.
Who's Candice Bure?
She was in the show with Bob Saget. My God.
Full House. Family Matters.
Full House. Yeah, no.
Family Matters is
Family Matters.
Different.
Was Family Matters was a better show though?
Family Matters
far,
was
right?
a better show, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So these are our top five Hallmark Christmas movies by title only. Haven't seen the movie, just simply the title of the movie. What's your number five?
This is gonna be ridiculous. I put my number five as A Christmas in Dollywood.
Okay. Do you have the description? Because I looked up the descriptions for the movies too. Give us the synopsis.
It says here the movie is when a New York City event planner returns to Tennessee to organize the Christmas celebration at Dollywood. She's paired with the head of operations who thinks he can handle the party just fine on his own.
I could potentially... I would never watch it, but is Dolly Parton in it?
Yeah, she is. Yep.
Okay. Well, that kind of actually probably makes that potentially could watch it. My number five is Window Wonderland, where a department store window decorator learns there is a vacancy for her dream job in the run-up to Christmas, only to find a professional rival has his eye on it too, but will love ensue. Window Wonderland. Could you imagine pitching that movie? Like, who's it going to be? Marketing. We're out of that one. PR. Well, we had a, how about a window decorator? We haven't done that. Okay.
Hollywood thinks it's hard to come up with new ideas. Imagine being Hallmark for these things. God.
All right. What's your number four?
All right. My number four is The Christmas Heart. And the synopsis is when a teenage boy desperately needs a heart transplant on Christmas Eve of all times, his family and neighbors' 40-year tradition of lining their street with Christmas luminaries is put on hold. When his parents pray for a donor on a stormy night, the neighbors suddenly realize their luminaries could have a deeper purpose.
Did they then go put up all the luminaries? I'm assuming that the neighborhood all bands together to put up the luminaries. And it's I bet it's a landing strip for Santa.
That's what I'm guessing.
Yeah. Okay. My number four is Naughty or Nice, mainly because it seems like an adult film, but it's actually a Hallmark Christmas movie. A down-on-her-luck advertising executive becomes the custodian of Santa's famous Naughty or Nice list. Hilarity must ensue.
Okay, it must be funny.
I don't think so. It's on Hallmark.
I only went with this one because I really like A Big Fat, or My Big Greek Wedding, or whatever. My Big Fat Greek Wedding.
Do you have that
this
on DVD? Called...
I do, actually. Well, I don't. My wife brought it into the relationship.
Man, there's a whole bunch of blaming other people, right? It's my father-in-law's. It's my wife's. When are you going to be the man, dude? When are you going to step up and take accountability? Take accountability for your decision.
A Big Fat Family Christmas is my number three. Liv gets an assignment to photograph the Chang family's annual holiday party for a front page story. Nobody at work knows that they are her family. She wants to confide in her new coworker, but doesn't want to jeopardize her big break.
Why do I feel like this is going to be a little racist? Right? Why do I feel like there's some racial undertones to this movie?
Think you're the only one that's thinking that, but I don't know. Maybe I'm naive.
I just feel like something offensive probably gets said in this movie. Like, wait, what are they doing?
All these movies are so fucking terrible.
Oh, wait, but not this one. Ice Sculpture Christmas. Callie, an aspiring chef with her childhood friend David, enters into Callie's club's annual Christmas ice sculpting competition against her boss. Callie's passions for cooking and ice sculpting are met with romance and Christmas spirit. Because that's what fucking happens.
Oh, boy. Well, I look at this list and I'm just like, I don't even know what to say. Like, there's literally 175 of these.
It's an unbelievable number of Christmas movies. Okay, what's your number? I have two for my number two. What's your number two?
My number two is A Cookie Cutter's Christmas.
I saw that one. I thought about it, but didn't go with it.
Two school teachers take their rivalry to a new level while they scramble to win a holiday baking contest in the affections of a handsome single father.
All these movies are basically the same. Two people competing against each other. Somebody loses their love for Christmas and finds it. Something terrible happens to a family with a Christmas tradition. It's basically just the same three movies remade in different ways. Like, Ice Sculpture Christmas is exactly the same as Window Wonderland. They just switched it out.
Just a different title. I wonder if they film them, like, in the same places. Like, if they just reuse the same
sets. Probably do. They're probably like, hey, so get rid of the ice sculpture. We need to just bring in a window dresser. Like, just scratch out this name and put it in there. Same script. Why even rewrite it? Okay.
What's your number two? Then you have two.
I have a tie for number two. It's a tie between Battle of the Bulbs. Bob Wallace makes sure to go all out every year on Christmas decorations so that he can have the brightest and most festive house in his neighborhood. This year, he notices that his new neighbor has put up an even brighter and more lavish display. The fight is on when they declare war for the best in Battle of the Bulbs. And this one, for some reason, just seems to be a little bit funny to me. It's Christmas, Carol. It's Christmas Eve in Chicago, and heartless tyrant publishing executive Carol is haunted by her dead ex-boss, who's the ghost of Christmas past, present, and future. It's a Christmas story, but it's Christmas, Carol.
Oh, man.
Yeah, who's watching these movies? Like, who's watching this?
Bro, I don't know. Like, I like some ridiculous shit, but these are... I mean, this is terrible. But surprisingly been fantastic to look up. My number one is... Single Santa Seeks Mrs. Claus.
I saw that one. I saw the title and was like, oh, that's pretty good.
Nick's plan to let fate bring his wife to him must be altered because he must replace his father as Santa Claus on December 26th. What? I don't know why December 26th. Ernst, the right-hand man to several generations of Santas, generates a list of potential mates. Nick dutifully sets off to meet them, but fate may have a candidate after all. And that stars Steve Guttenberg. Like, he's a pretty big name.
Yeah, but that's probably one of the most famous Hallmark actors. He's still working.
Yeah, and his...
Just in that
he's
movie.
He's still out there.
God, how much do you think he hates being there? Right?
Or
is he just happy to have some work?
Yeah, he probably doesn't hate the paycheck. So that's for sure.
My number one is Jingle and Bells Christmas Star. It is in Jingle and Bell, Jingle the husky pup and his buddy Andrew meet some new friends. A girl Andrew's age, Sophia, and her husky pup, this is the actual description, Bell, who was previously referred to as Jingle, well, it's not very well written, didn't put a lot of effort into this description. They've moved from sunny Palm City to Pineville weeks before Christmas, and with no friends and nothing to expect, can these two dogs help their lovers or help their owners find love? I mean, it does have dogs in it.
I'm not going to lie to you. I stopped reading when you struggled the first time.
Yeah, I didn't do so well. I have trouble with reading. What's in your honorable mention? There's like, I've got so many.
All right, I'll pick out three here because I also put a bunch on the list. Angels and Ornaments.
Yep.
Three suitors pursue a hopeless romantic after she makes a wish to find true love before Christmas. Fur Crazy, but fur is F-I-R after the kind of Christmas tree. Jesus Christ. And then my last one, which is completely deceiving, is The Sons of Mistletoe. And that is the description, and it's simple. A foster home for boys is in danger of being closed when its benefactor dies.
Oh, that doesn't really sound like a happy movie. Okay, I've got a bunch, so I'm just going to list them off. Matchmaker Santa, Christmas Land, Best Christmas Party Ever, A Very Merry Mix-Up, Annie Claus is Coming to Town, The Santa Incident, Love on Ice, Switched for Christmas, and The Christmas Secret, all of which are basically the same movie.
Like you said earlier, I think it's hard. You could take out one word of each description of every movie we talked about, except for The Sons of Mistletoe. And everything's, I mean, they're all the same movie.
Yeah. What's your favorite Christmas movie?
Oof. I probably have to go It's a Wonderful Life.
For me, it's Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Okay, that's going to go ahead and do it for this episode of Profoundly Pointless. I want to thank you so much for joining us. If you get a chance, subscribe, leave us a rating or a review. We really appreciate it. It really helps out the show. Episodes are available on YouTube. Episodes come out in podcast form, audio form, I should say, on Wednesdays. And then we put them up on YouTube on Thursdays. And it can be, especially in this case, right? You can see how he is actually doing it. And it's amazing. It's so interesting to see just all the different things that people can do and what you can really do if you put your mind to it. I know that's kind of the thing that, like, right, your parents told you that when you were a little kid and you were like, yeah, okay, whatever. But it's fascinating all the different things that people are capable of. And you just never know. I can, you know, say this from personal experience, you just never know what you're going to be interested in or what could be something that could really bring you joy. Wishing you some holiday joy this holiday season. Let us know if you've ever actually watched a Hallmark Christmas movie. I've never watched one. They just seem terrible, but maybe I'd really, really like it.
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.